I'm Sonia Sicanto, and this is my podcast, Unseen: Legacies of Childhood. Oh, what a treat I have for you today. I'm speaking to Dylan from the band Dylan and the Moon. Dylan was 2023's Project Icon winner, which led him to the opportunity of a lifetime getting to work with the superstar Jason Derulo. Dylan has always been transparent and open about being transgender, and I was thrilled when he agreed to chat to me. He shared how he felt as if he was in the wrong body, the realization that he was very, very unhappy, the huge decision to make the op, and how this impacted his self-acceptance and self-esteem, but also the impact it had on his creativity. Dylan, hello. Welcome to my podcast. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. This is such a pleasure. How is your day going?
Yes, very good. I'm very excited to be here. I've got my coffee and ready to go.
Yes, me too. Yeah. I've got mine ready.
You need it.
Yes, exactly. So I was watching, I was having a little look at your Instagram. So you're Dylan, musician and trans.
Mm-hmm, that is correct.
So how, for our listeners, if they're not familiar, how would you describe trans?
I was assigned female at birth, mm-hmm. and I lived in the female experience probably till I was about 25 or 6, until I started to voice how I felt about not being a female and how I'd always felt very masculine and I'd always felt like a boy. That's when I seriously started to speak to people about it, but it's something that had cropped up throughout my life. When I was 3 or 4, I remember talking to my parents about how I didn't like the way they used to put me in clothes, and I had said stuff like, well, none of the other boys wear this, or you know, it was sort of in a childlike language. I didn't have the language to be able to share my story in a way that I can do now. But when I was 3 or 4, it was like, well, the other boys don't wear dresses. And then on my 5th or 6th birthday, my sister gave me a card, and on video, like, there's a little video of it, and it says, to my youngest sister. And I look at the camera and I said, but I'm your youngest brother. And it's very innocent, and it's very like clear. But for me, it was always very powerful to see these things, because it's a big definition for me that it's something that I always knew about myself. But then,
and that's very young, isn't it? That's very young to feel that way.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's one of the biggest things that sometimes people don't understand. It's not a decision that you make when you are 20 or 30 or 40, that's when you realize that you can't live not being the authentic person you are. But the decision is something, I mean, I never made a decision. It's just, it's the same way as a straight person would say, well, I never chose to be straight, when they question why someone's gay. Like, you don't choose to be gay, you don't choose to be straight, you don't choose to be trans. And I'm sure
you just are.
So for me, so that's my story. Like, I've always known I'm a guy. But it took me until about 25, 26 to start talking about it. And then I think I began my transition around 27.
So quite a long journey then, isn't it? So when you were in your childhood then, so how did you manage that as a, maybe let's say from 10 to 15, like, how did you manage not being a boy? How did you feel about it? How did you speak about it? Did you have support?
I think actually that was probably the most difficult time for me. I would say around 12, 13 to 16, 17, because that's also the era of your life where all your friends, you know, you're in school, everyone's going through puberty, everyone looks a little bit ugly, everyone's trying to date, everyone's like seeking out their sexuality and getting to know people and getting boyfriends and girlfriends. And for me, that was really quite a scary time, because I knew I was a straight man and I was into women, but because I existed in what people perceived as like a woman's body, then the perception of me would have been a gay person. And I wasn't ready to say I'm gay at like 14, 15, because I knew that I wasn't. I knew that I was very much a man into women. So I basically just sort of secluded myself from that whole like dating world and sexuality thing. And I was kind of this like androgynous, alienish type character who was friends with everyone. And I made sure that like I was kind to everyone in my year group at school, so that like I wouldn't be bullied or ostracized. So I was like, I was a bit of a class clown. I was very friendly with everyone. And I think I just sort of got on with everyone as like, he's that guy, you know, he's just that one person. But it was very tricky. And I remember I had some really low times during that period. especially because, I mean, I'm sure everyone does in that period of their life because you're getting to know yourself. And yeah. like at the time, you think school is the biggest thing you ever have. And
yeah,
it is hard. But for me, it was very personally challenging. And I remember feeling, you know, really dark at some of those points. And also, I grew up in a small town in Cornwall called Newquay. And, you know, there was very little representation there of the LGBT community anyway. So I didn't know people that were gay, and I definitely didn't know people that were trans. So I really thought I was the only person in the world that, with inverted commas, had been born in the wrong body, you know, and I was convinced that that's what my life had meant.
And you could, there was no one you could talk to about this at that time.
Well, if we go back to like the childhood era, there was a few times when I'd raised this idea, like, oh, I'm your youngest brother, or I want to wear what the other boys are wearing. And it was kind of this thing that I kept sort of like throwing out to my family, who were a safe space. And every time it just was sort of, it was taken kindly, but it wasn't reciprocated with, well, we can do something about that. Yeah. And I don't blame my parents or my family for it, because I've said this before on podcasts, but sometimes kids can say stuff like, I'm a penguin. I understand like that kids can say some strange things, so parents can't always just immediately jump to the first thing. So I do understand why, but I remember, you know, as a kid, I think what you do is you say things in a safe space, and then you see what the reaction is as to whether you can continue with that. And because I didn't really receive any reaction, positive or negative, it was just kind of like, that's clearly not a safe thing to say, and no one else feels this way. So if I come out and say this kind of stuff, I'm going to be ostracized or bullied or, you know, resented or unloved. And I just, that was probably more subconsciously scary for me.
And you're obviously very instinctive, aren't you? Very intuitive, because you already knew how to protect yourself at such a young age.
Yeah, I mean, and it wasn't even conscious. I suppose it's kind of, I don't know whether it's cultural or ancestral, like going back to the days of tribes. Like, you don't want to be left out of the tribe. You want to be part of the community. So I guess you do sort of learn that stuff from a young age without even knowing. But I think it was more that I hadn't seen it in music or TV or in the media or anywhere. So I was like, this is just a me thing. I'm the only person in the world. And it was scary. So I really didn't talk to anyone about it properly.
It must be isolating, alienating, isn't it? It's a very lonely experience.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it actually continued being lonely until about 25 or 26, even though I was older, and even though to the naked eye it may have seemed like I was having a much better experience or a much better time, because I was in the public eye and I was making music, and, you know, my friends at home must have been like, oh, he's doing so well. But really, I think I masked it more and more and more as the older I got, because, you know, I was very uncomfortable in my body. I was very uncomfortable with the way I was being perceived all the time. But I think I went in the other direction so much to sort of convince myself that I was the one that was, you know, I was incorrect rather than everyone else not understanding me. So I sort of just left Dylan alone out there and went off being my previous self, and on autopilot, really, just to sort of try and fit in. So it got lonelier, which is why I came to the place of being, you know, 26, 27, when I decided that I could no longer be, because I'd just become a caricature of myself, and I didn't really know who I was. And then I just decided that, like, I can't do that anymore. Like, it's very damaging.
So who were you before?
I had lived my life as in a female experience with, you know, a different name, not very different in sort of like attire or clothing or appearance in that way. I was very surefire that, like, I wouldn't wear feminine clothes because I didn't like them. So there was only a short period of my life where, I think it was about 16, where I must have gone to 2 or 3 birthday parties of my friends, like, in a dress, which was incredibly uncomfortable. And the whole time I felt like a man in drag. I was sort of prancing around the room, like, pretending to be all the things that I thought a feminine person would do. It was quite tricky. I went off and created this sort of caricature again as like a protection. So I've been releasing music under the name Lotz Holloway, because Lotz was short for my original name, Lottie. But I'm comfortable talking about that because I released music under that name for a long time, and it's still all available online. So that's who I was before.
And how, so was music then an outlet for your feelings? Like, if you had no one to talk to, would you say writing songs would have been an outlet for you?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's one of the reasons I went into music in the first place. I think I remember being a kid and looking through my dad's record collection and seeing people like Mick Jagger and David Bowie and Freddie Mercury sort of expand the gender of clothing, you know, like David Bowie used to wear quite feminine things.
Very androgynous.
And it was the first time I remember seeing people do something different and be celebrated at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, cool, right? There are safe spaces for people to be a bit kooky and a bit weird. And it also helped that I really loved music and my family loved music. So when I had expressed an interest in becoming a drummer, that was my original thing. I wanted a drum kit. They were sort of keen to, allow me to do that. And I think also it helped with that internal rage, the feeling of like, I just wanted to move my body and get something out that I wasn't able to express with words. So I started to play drums, and then eventually, I used to write, poems and notes and stuff and put them under my bed at night. And then I really got into the idea of creating songs. So I asked my dad for a guitar, and he bought me my first guitar at one of my birthdays. Wow. And then I taught myself. I used to sit in front of my laptop every night after school, just looking up songs and like how to play the chords and stuff. And then I just started putting my own words with the songs. And for me, it was easy to write a song about being upset or alone or I don't know, any of those things. And then when someone comes to you and say, do you feel that way, you could be like, oh no, it's just a song.
That's vulnerable. You're putting your vulnerable self out there.
But the thing, always you can turn back and say, oh, it's just a song, or it's about someone else, or whatever. And that's what I did for a long time. I actually wrote a song when I must have been about 14 or 15, and it's called Misconception. As in like misconception.
Yeah, very good.
It's all about being someone that people don't know who you are. And like, I remember my friends asking me, like, is this about you? I was like, oh no, I just made it up. But really it was like a cathartic outlet to talk about being someone that I wasn't. And I've done that throughout my whole life. I'm not very good at coming to someone with words and saying something, but I can write it and then, sing it in song.
And do you, would you say now that you do, you are able to say that this is like, particularly, I'll tell you, because I find it hard. I can speak to people. I can speak to anyone. I'm a chatterbox. I cannot speak to my family. I find it hard.
Yeah, right.
So friends, chatterbox all day, tell them everything. But if I have to say to my dad, oh, I'm really finding this hard, I feel like I struggle. I can't say it. It doesn't come out.
Yeah, I actually appreciate that as well. I think I've experienced that in my own life, and I've come to the conclusion for me, and it's not the same for everyone, but I've never wanted to disappoint my parents, or I've always wanted for me to be in their eyes someone that's great and coping and happy and lovable, and I've never wanted to disappoint them. So going to them is a bigger deal, isn't it, going to your parents, because you don't want to say I'm having a hard time or struggling. But with your friends, you're not anyone special. Like, really, like, you're not on a pedestal, really, for them. So you can say,
they're not judging you,
Yeah, because we've all got our flaws, and we know our friends' flaws as well, more so than we know our parents. Because as a kid, you see your parents, and they've always been parents, right? So you think they're knowledgeable and they know everything, and they don't have problems and struggles. But really, like, knowing my parents now and people. Everyone has issues, and when they had me, they were 20 and young 20s, and they were young, and it was just, I don't know, we always just assume like grandparents, so they've always been grandparents, right?
But
they weren't. Right. Everyone is doing life for the first time.
It's true. It doesn't come with a manual, like they say. It doesn't come with a manual. They haven't got the clue. I mean, I used to be so angry with my parents, the poor things. I don't know how many times I've said, you did this, when I was younger, because I was the same as you. I felt really sort of different.
Right.
I just felt different. I just didn't like the same things as everyone else. I didn't look the same as everyone in my family. I just had a different attitude to life. I was a bit rebellious, a bit grumpy. And I was grumpy in my teenage years because no one understood me. I felt like nobody understood me and I didn't fit in. And it just made me so angry, you know. So still to this day, I'll say to my mama, you know, what you said back when I was 15 really hurt. I'm like 50 now. I'm still whinging.
Yeah. I mean, the rebellious thing is, I actually think it's a great thing to come out of situations like that, because being a bit rebellious makes you sort of push forward in new ways. You can pioneer new paths for other people, and people probably will see you now or see you then and be like, oh, I wish I could be a bit more like, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's so good. I mean, that's what you're doing. I mean, I saw your, you did that too. You sang Can I Make You Mine? You and previous you.
Right, yeah, side by side. Yeah.
Oh, mind blown.
Yeah,
My brain just went.
It's quite crazy. And I wasn't going to share those to begin with. I mean, for your listeners, because I've been a musician for so long, I have lots of recordings of myself throughout the years singing different songs and cover songs and whatever. And I was playing piano, I guess I was about 24. So, and then I recently re-recorded a version in the same room, in the same angle. And if you can watch them side by side, and I'm basically harmonizing and singing with myself. And I made a couple of them and I sent them to some friends and they were like, dude, this is amazing. This is so cool. But I felt way too vulnerable to put them online. I was like, this is too much for me, because initially when I had decided to transition, my thought process on the matter was, I'm going to go forward as Dylan, push forward, and I'm going to have a new life with new music and new attitude, and I'm going to remove all of my old stuff because I just don't want it to exist anymore.
Of course, it's not you.
Yeah, because it hurts. But what was interesting is that was my opinion at that moment, because I was still in that pain feeling. And then as I transitioned and as I saw more of myself through the mirror and as I heard my voice change and as I could finally see the person I felt inside, lots of that pain went away. So when I saw those videos, I was like, actually, that person brought me to where I am now. And now looking at them, it doesn't feel so painful anymore. But when I still looked like them, it was very painful. So I was kind of like, if I can put them online and take the charge out of it, then, you know, hopefully someone else out there who may feel the same as I did would be able to say, oh, you know, this person's had a really positive experience with their transition, and it's not always doom and gloom. And it's not, because there's a lot of like negative narrative in the media and in the industry, and especially like with the government and the trans rights and stuff. So it must seem like a very terrifying place to be, but I wanted to sort of show people that it's not always.
When did you make the decision to have the transition?
I was about 26, I think, when I decided that I wanted to change my body. And initially for me, it was really important because I really had an issue with the top half of my body. So, I just wanted top surgery, which is a bilateral. Sorry,
I can't remember the word.
Bilateral mastectomy, so removal of the tissue, and that for me that was the biggest thing. Like I just wanted to have a masculine chest, and I was really scared at the idea of taking testosterone because of my voice, and because I'd always been a singer and it was a career and it made money and people liked it how it was. I was like, well, I'm not going to take testosterone for now. I just want to change my body so at least I can look at myself without feeling upset. So that's what I did first. I think it was about 2020, so three, 4 years ago. And then it wasn't long after that I had the experience of when you take an inch, you want the mile. Mm-hmm. So after finally I could, you know, shower or go to the beach or look at myself and not feel that sort of inner like anger. But then, you know, I would go out or go to the post office to send something and the person at the post office would misgender me because they could hear my voice and see my face. And I was like, having top surgery hasn't changed my life in the way that I would have wanted to. So I was like, I made the decision that actually I am going to have to take testosterone to be the person that I want to be.
How were you received post-op by everyone around you?
I mean, I think for the most part, all of my family and friends were happy to receive me that way, because for the first time I felt and was being visibly different in my appearance and the way that I moved my body through the world. Like, because before, I used to have this posture that was very like tight and rigid, and I was trying to cover something all the time. And for the first time in my life, I had my chest out and I had my shoulders back, and I was stood really tall and like moving my arms like this, and I was very proud of my body. And I think it's very noticeable when you're used to someone and the way they stand and move, when they suddenly walk through the door and they have this whole different demeanor. So I think for the most part, everyone was really, really happy for me. I don't remember having any sort of negativity from anyone close to me. And then it was only ever, you know, running errands where there were just people that were sort of like, I can't work this out. Like, is he this? Is she the? Is it that kind of thing? But I had really been used to that my entire life, because, you know, when I was a kid all the way to being a teenager, I'd always wanted short hair. I'd always worn boys' clothes. So I used to go out and hang out. My sister used to swim, and I would go to swimming competitions with my family and hang out at the pools and stuff. And like in the waiting areas, like in my clothes, and people would always be like, is that this is a boy or girl? So I was very used to that kind of behavior, and it became normal to me. But overall, I felt very liberated, and it was an enjoyable experience. Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it, how something like that, when you feel much happier in yourself, how your whole posture changes, your face opens up, everything just completely changes, doesn't it? You just don't realize how important it is. If you live constantly not feeling like yourself and you're all closed up, you just don't know any different, do you, until you make that change?
Yeah, for sure. And it's something you can't, I mean, it probably is something you can fabricate. There's the whole, you know, fake it till you make it thing. But if there is something, it was so like intrinsically part of protecting you, like it's like you almost can't open up your body, because, you know, it feels so dangerous to do that. So afterwards, I felt this sense of great relief, and now I enjoy going to the gym, and I have this like great workout routine, and I love the way my body looks, and I've never felt happier.
I'm so excited. I just love this. Just, you know, I'm so, well, first of all, I'm so impressed, because how old are you now?
I turned 30 this year.
So you've done so much. And to me, in my mind, it's such a small period of time. Like 30, that's still young. Do you know what I mean? Like for me, it's taken me till 50 to think, oh, I'm a chatterbox. Maybe I could do something else with my life. I just like talking. But for you, do you know, you started young, and you knew from very young what you wanted to be, what you wanted to do. And you evolved into music and an outlet. And then you evolved into your body and changing your body. Like, you've done so much in a small period of time, haven't you?
Yeah.
How do you feel?
Yeah. I feel great. And when someone sort of retells you your own story in that way, like, it does make you feel quite good, because there are often occasions when I think, oh, I wish I'd done it sooner, or I wish I'd been quicker on the get-go to be able to open up, or I wish I'd been stronger and said to my parents this at a younger age. But, you know, you say 30 is still young, and 26, 27, when I spoke about it, is still young. I think it's just the way the world is moving now, with more representation and more people understanding the LGBTQ+ community. Mm-hmm. It means that it's more available for people younger. So I look at some people now who are coming out at 21, 22, who know who they are. And I knew who I was at 21, 22, but I wasn't brave enough. But I think the thing is, they have people to look up to now, so it's easier for them to do it. So I don't know. I mean, I also don't want to change the experience that I've had, because it has had highs and lows, but I think everything you go through does make you who you are. So there is kind of like a bittersweetness to it. You know, I wouldn't be this exact person with my exact stories if I hadn't been through the life I have.
Absolutely. It makes you who you are today, doesn't it? When you walk into a room now, do you have to, I mean, not that you have to, but do you say, hi, Dylan, I'm, you know, do you mention you're trans? Do you need to mention you're trans because you're male?
Yeah, I don't. And I don't think a lot of trans people do. It's usually just sort of, well, yeah, I'm a guy. And like, I walk in the same way as any bloke would walk into a room, probably being very annoying, like any other bloke walking into a room. but I bring it up if I feel comfortable. And if it's relevant to a story, you know, if I meet new people for the first time, going out for drinks with friends of friends, I don't bring it up all night long, because there's no reason for me to do that. But if if in like a few hours' time someone brings up a story about a friend at Pride or something this or something that, and it's relevant, I would be like, oh, well, I'm actually a trans guy. And if it becomes relevant to the story, then I would. But I wouldn't ever feel like it's other people's right or business to know if I don't want to bring it up, because it's not
it's not really business.
And I think the only time I guess it's interesting or important to talk about is if I was on a date or something. But most of the people that I've met and I've dated have known me either through music or friends of friends, or you know, sort of found me that way, so it's something that they already know about me.
While I'm thinking now, because you said that you didn't have many people growing up that you could look up to, have you ever spoken to any young people about this, about your particular journey? Because I'm thinking I was talking to a doctor yesterday, and she said to me that the mental health of youngsters nowadays is so bad, and they are so depressed and so anxious and so stressed. And I just think this particular conversation is going to help a lot of people out there. And I'm wondering, has anyone, you know, any of your fans, have they ever come up to you and ask you any questions about it, or said to you you've helped them in any way, or have you had conversations with your fans about it?
Yeah, yes is the answer to both of those parts of the question. With my fans, it's actually something that has been going on for quite a while, because the first time I started making music, obviously this was before I transitioned, so I'd presented female, and at the time I was dating a girl, obviously, so it was kind of people saw me as a gay person. And I remember I had like fan mail from some young girls, and they were sort of like, I also am attracted to women, and I've never seen anyone else on television, and you know, you've helped me come out to my parents because they've seen you, and blah, blah, blah. So it's always been quite like a running theme through my life, that I go out and be me, and then other people see that and feel more comfortable. And it's not something I'm actively purposefully doing, but it's just, I guess it's the act, it's like a rebellious act of authenticity, just can impact people in such a positive way. And then now I get a lot of, obviously because my transition was so public and open, because my fans knew me before and they know me now, I had a lot of people throughout sort of just saying thank you for being so honest. And there's a lot more people now who are trans who follow my music as well, who are grateful for the way that I was open about it. And in the doing of all of that, I was contacted by a couple of youth organizations.
That would make sense, wouldn't it?
And a couple of schools as well. I went initially back to my own secondary school. What's really cool is since leaving the school, they have now set up like a youth LGBT club that happens bi-monthly. And they'd sort of contacted me and said, do you want to come back? And would you talk to the kids? And I was like, obviously, yeah, like this is amazing. So I went back into my school and spoke to this group of kids. And it was almost like something that I thought I was doing to benefit them. But when I got there, I had such a cathartic release of like my own emotions. It was almost like I'd healed something in my life of my own school journey as well. So doing that has been like beautiful for me.
That is truly a gift. That is so amazing, Dylan.
Thank you.
What a fantastic thing to do. Do you know, I was thinking, oh, you know, when you were talking about this, I thought, he should really do some school rounds, you know, he could really help people. And you've already done it. You're way ahead of me.
Well, I've done my own school, and I'm planning to go to a school in Switzerland next year that have sort of come through it in a different route, and they want me to go and talk to their sort of Pride alumni and that, which is quite cool. But I don't know whether I'm perfect for the school environment.
I'm so excited. Oh my god, this is so cool! Oh my god, this is so cool! You are brilliant! Oh wow, you are so good at speaking. You're so eloquent. You would just be perfect for this. I mean, you're a musician, okay? So that's first. But this is a platform, and you're doing amazing work already.
Yeah, my biggest thing is to make sure that I don't swear.
It's difficult, isn't it?
It is hard.
Oh god, okay, so Switzerland, that'll be a new one, won't it?
Yeah, I'll be excited. So yeah, I mean, in any way that I could try and, you know, help people. And initially I thought the way that I help people is through music, because you know, I write songs, and they're not obviously not all about identity. A lot of my music, like everyone else's, is about love and heartbreak.
Yeah.
And I write a lot about that. You know, I wrote a song. It actually came out, well, today on our recording day, but anyone could go and listen to it by the time this comes out. It's called Be Naked.
Be Naked. Yes. Yes. I love that song. Yeah.
Thank you. I wrote it about 4.5, 5 years ago when I broke up with a long-term girlfriend. And it was a sort of a very sad breakup where we had loved each other for like seven years. But for some reason, the love itself was just sort of not there anymore. And it was kind of this, let's just be naked and be honest. And let's just say, instead of like running this to the ground, that maybe we want this to work, but it's not going to. And let's just let it be. So that song, it was about that. And I released it 4.5 years ago. And since transitioning, I've gone back and re-recorded a lot of my music, including this song. And it, yeah, it's out now. But people relate. Thank you. People sort of relate to the music. And that's what I thought my purpose, you know, in life was, to write things and people would find their own stories within them. But now, you know, since I've been invited to do more podcasts and talks and panels, I don't know, I don't know whether it's the way I'm like, it's just really open. I don't really.
Yeah.
I'll just ask the question. But for some reason, people seem to enjoy it. So maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree. Maybe I should get into
this. Well, yeah, it's good. You've got two careers here, haven't you? You can just go in any direction. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
But I mean, you are so good at speaking about it. And it's such an important subject that I don't think it's covered enough. I don't think it's enough people to raise the awareness of it. And I don't think people are aware of the kind of traumas that kids are going through nowadays. They don't even think that would be a thing, do you know? So
yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest issues. I mean, for me, the way I always try and describe it, because there is a lot of movement towards helping, you know, the LGBTQ plus community themselves. So like, there's a lot of infrastructure implemented in workplaces to like look after the LGBTQ plus employees. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, like, it's not those people that specifically need help or awareness, because they know who they are.
Yes,
they don't
exactly
need to be told by a speaker who they are. Who really need the help and the education are the other people who work at your business or in the school. Like, it needs to be the head teacher, then the teachers, yeah, then the dinner people. Like, it's those people that need the education, because it's those people that don't know, and therefore those people that have fears or insecurities about it. Yeah. And if it was holistically sort of supported in that way, then the trans or the queer or the whoever people would feel more supported, rather than just specifically singling them out as if they need more support. So I don't know. It's a bigger question, isn't it, and how to tackle it. And I think it's a lot of the issue with what, I don't know, government and the things that they implement now and the things that they say. It can be quite fear mongering, because I think they themselves,
absolutely,
they don't spend enough time with people in the community. They don't know what the existence is like. So it's very easy to sort of judge from an outsider's point of view and then say that. But they have to be aware that when you're on a public platform and you can access that many people in such a short tweet or a comment, or, you know, it's very dangerous. So, I mean, I think it's
irresponsible, isn't it? Yeah.
Irresponsible is a great word. I think it needs to be like a greater educational thing. And I think it's helpful for these things to be spoken about in school at a younger age, because I think people's biggest fear is that if we teach things at a younger age, it will, and this is the nature and nurture thing, right? The assumption is that you will convince people to be this way or that.
Absolutely.
But it's very untrue, because you are the way you are regardless of those things, in my opinion. And also, if you get down into the nitty gritty of it, if you don't want to persuade people one way or the other, then why are all of the cartoons that we watch always heteronormative? Because that's very persuasive in itself. If everything is very male and female, then that in itself is very, very, very persuasive.
Mm.
So I think it should be a bit more, you know, relaxed and open. And I think it's healthy to talk about the way that people exist in the world, because shutting it out of education makes it seem something negative when it isn't. And if we just spoke about it more, it would be raise awareness for everyone, and that people who are gay and queer and trans, they exist. So we need to talk about it and teach people about it.
And how would you suggest they do that in schools? What would be your ideas to do in schools? What would you have liked to see in your school?
I think I would have just liked, even, you know, like, I can't remember what the topic is. I think it's, when I was at school, it was called SHE, but I think it's PSHE now. That's the sort of sociology and the working of the world. And I think it wouldn't even have to be something that's a massive, massive topic, but the way that we discuss drugs or religion, you know, we go and we have RE, so we learn about religious, other religious beliefs and stuff. Just because I'm learning about another religious belief doesn't mean that all of a sudden, oh, well, I've read about it now, so therefore I must be this. It's just something that you're educating people on. So I think as a topic, just learning about other people and how they live is really great. And also in, I don't know, textbooks and things like that, I think sometimes it would be nice, instead of reading Adam and Sally have two children, da da da, it could be, you know, Becca and Millie have two children and da 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 da. Like, it, I don't think it needs to be quite so specific all the time.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you. It is a little bit too binary, black and white, and it doesn't really cover a lot of other things, does it? So if you, so aside from schools, where else do you think you could make a difference?
I'm not sure whether it would be me directly, but I mean, speaking in companies, I think would be a great place as well. That I did a talk at Spotify, funnily enough, which is a music company as well. And I went in there and I did a speech, and also at an agency for like celebrities and entertainment, we sort of spoke on a panel. I spoke with Gokwan and a couple other people about, you know, making just raising awareness and stuff. I think it's sometimes bigger corporations that just wouldn't have access to thinking about it, and therefore that I guess it might seem like something they bypass in their strategies for like helping their employees. I think anywhere could benefit from a bit of education about it. And it doesn't have to be boring either. It's not like, you know, you go and just do a seminar and just talk and ram things down people's throats. It can be something that's quite an interactive, a storytelling. So when I go to this school in Switzerland, we're sort of planning like a workshop day for the kids, where I sort of talk about a bit about my journey, but then there's a bit of music involved, and maybe we collaboratively write a new song, and people can sort of like help with lyrics about their lives and sort of discuss how they're feeling, which for the first time, there might be kids there who have never been able to say how they feel, but now they feel they can write it in a lyric or something. So it's different ways of making it interesting and fun, I think.
Well, that sounds pretty excellent, isn't it? I mean, what a wonderful way to get them to talk about their feelings and express themselves, because, you know, people struggle, you know, especially at, like you say, the teen years. It's actually very, very alienating, those teen years, isn't it? You can't really get out. It's not easy to find people you can talk to, because even in your friend set, sometimes you don't really want to tell your friends everything, your intimate details, exactly. All those deepest, darkest thoughts, you know?
Yeah, it's easier to do with someone, you know, someone who's like out of it, someone objective, right? So it's interesting. And I think these stories like mine don't have to be narrow-mindedly only beneficial to someone else who is trans or in the queer community, because my story itself is sort of one of acceptance, rebellion, and freedom. Like, and there's a lot of people out there who could be, let's say, in a job that they really don't like, and it's inauthentic to them, and they go every day and they're doing things that they don't want to do. There's so many people that experience that, who, or someone who's in a marriage that really no longer fulfills them, who is very unenjoyable for. And just, it's about like being true to who you are and living a life that you're happy to live and be authentic in it, and making changes to do that before it's too late. So I think it's a story that's universal, and it, just because mine is in with this trans twinge to it, doesn't mean that it'll be the same for everyone.
Oh my God, Dylan for Prime Minister.
I wouldn't want to have my vote.
Thank you very much. You convinced me.
Thanks.
That is exactly how I feel. I just feel everyone's misrepresented, misunderstood. I don't feel the people in power really care. Sorry, I'm being a bit controversial. And I feel that if we are a little more compassionate towards each other, a little more patient, a bit more understanding, I just feel it goes a long way towards helping others lift up. You know, and like you say, your music lifts people up. That's what you're creating, aren't you? You're creating music that lifts people up. Stories of love. So, okay, going back to your post-op now, I forgot to ask a question. Did you worry about how the op would change your voice?
Yeah, so my op, the like a surgery for the top surgery, unaffected, but then they're going on testosterone is more of, it's like a gradual process. So it's something that I began to take, and then over the course of time, it's just exactly the same as when like a young lad would go through puberty at 11 or 12 and his voice would break. It's the same process. So it's me doing puberty, but at 26 or 7.
Yeah.
So my voice was changing over the course of a few months, and it mostly changed within 1 year and a half. And then it sort of settles into like where it's going to exist. And I was very worried about how it would change my voice, because my voice up until that point had been the safety net that I existed within, because it was an access point for me to make friends. And it sounds very cringe talking about it now, but at one point in my life, I genuinely thought that the fact that I could sort of sing and was one of the reasons people would even like me. It was just, or like in school, some girls fancied me, even though they probably shouldn't have, because it was like kind of cool. And it was just this thing that I used to hold on to, is like, this is my only kind of quality that people actually like.
You didn't feel that you were good enough on your own. You needed a voice.
Yeah. And it sounds sad to say that, but I think it was just it made me something more than falling back on the qualities that I may or may not have had. Like I genuinely felt like, me being me was like, well, great. I'm just this weird kid that no one will ever understand, and I can't be authentic, and no one knows how I really feel. But then, you know, I was able to sing and play guitar in school assemblies. And at that point, you then become this kind of cool guy, and he's a musician. And it became like an egoic, like, okay, well, at least I have this thing, and it's keeping people around me. And, you know, now I've dismantled that, because I am a very aware, like I have friends and family who love me regardless of whether I play this super guitar or not. But at the time, I didn't think that way. But, and even now, like when I was going through my transition at 26, 27, I still felt like that was a reason why people were interested in my life, because of this voice. So to risk that, and I didn't know how it would affect my voice. Obviously, I knew it would get lower, and I knew that I would sound this way and be masculine, but I didn't know how it would affect my singing voice. That's why it was scary, and whether it would lose the quality that people had sort of liked before. Mm. But I made the decision. I was like, I'm going to do it anyway, because I need to be this person. But fortunately for me, in my opinion, it's only made my voice better, because I like it more now. So before, I found that like I would sing often, I would sing and I would record music, but I was very fearful about how to use my voice, because I never wanted it to sound too feminine, which is so ironic, because when I listen to my old songs, I'm like, it sounds so feminine and floaty. But I was very like reluctant to use it in certain ways. Whereas now, you know, I have this voice, and I belt out or I sing quietly. I'm just so unafraid of using my voice. So therefore, it has a better quality to it, because there's no holding back.
But there's no holding back in every way, isn't there? Because now you talk about freely how you feel, you sing, you advocate, you raise awareness. Like your voice is being used in every possible way, like loud and proud in every way that you could possibly do it. I mean, that's fantastic. Yeah. And what was your first gig that you had where you used your new voice?
Oh, it was actually quite special, because I had done a gig at a place called The Green Note in Camden in London. Mm-hmm. And this was in 2018 or 19. And it sold out in like 20 minutes. It was amazing. And it's a small venue, so it's not something massive. It was like, I think it's about 100 capacity. So it sold out really quickly in 2019, pre my transition. And I had such a good night there. And, you know, it was full of love, and I was singing new songs. Anyway, then, you know, COVID happened. I went through my transition. And then in 2020, well, I think it was last year, 22, I decided that I would do my first gig back as Dylan at the Green Note, and I sold tickets for that. And again, I think it was probably mostly exactly the exact same 100 people that were like, yes, I'm buying a ticket. And I said, like, this is a gig, and I'm coming back and playing songs for the first time. And I went back and played a lot of the same set list, but as me now. So old songs in a new way. And something quite fun that we did. There's a song of mine called Off My Brain. And obviously before it was all lots, it was my old voice. And when I played it at the gig, I had my old backing vocals come through the speakers behind me, and then I sang the main melody over the top. So it was almost like I was doing a duet with my former self. And it was, yeah, it was quite a special moment. It was just very, I don't know, raw.
Does anyone know that you were doing your own backing vocals?
I sort of mentioned it before. I sort of said, I'm bringing someone out to do a duet with me. Everyone's looking around the room like, where is this person? And then all of a sudden you could hear your voice. But these people are like fans of my music, so they knew immediately, the penny dropped, they knew, okay, he's collaborating with his former self. So it's kind of like, I mean, I've never seen it done. I guess it's quite rare, and I don't really know a lot of trans people in the music industry, and if there are, I think some of them had been through a transition before they had a lot of their collateral before. So I have kind of access to something quite cool, which I'm very appreciative of, and now I try and utilize as much as possible, because like, well, why not?
I don't know anyone that's done that before. I mean, that is uniquely you, isn't it? So now let's talk about your confidence levels. So looking at where you were from the beginning to how you are now, so the old Dylan, also old Lot, to Dylan now. Mm-hmm. How do you sit with yourself now? How are you feeling about yourself now?
Well, I have like an undeniable sense of joy and self-happiness. Like there's just an ease about my life now, which I don't really remember ever feeling before this. Like I've always experienced, you know, happiness and times of joy. Like, don't get me wrong, it wasn't a completely tragic story from day one until 26, but I remember always having this sense of there was some darkness inside of me because of something I was keeping secret, and because of that sort of, I was always second guessing myself and thinking how I was perceived or how I looked or what people thought of me all the time. Whereas now, it's so liberating because I don't have those thoughts at all. So it's a very peaceful, new, like, lightness that I have to my life now, which is just really, really enjoyable.
If there are, for any of our listeners out there who are really struggling pre-op with this situation, what advice would you give them? What words do you have?
It's a tricky one because I've been in that place, and the feeling sometimes is that you can feel quite inconsolable, and even the shiniest of words don't feel like they're going to help. But the thing I would say to people is that, like, this too will pass. It's probably a George Harrison quote, but it's like the feeling that you're feeling right now will eventually subside because you're moving towards the goal that you want. So if you can try and find even the smallest amount of joy in the steps heading towards the days when you can feel more comfortable, then that's really where it's at, because, you know, just find, like, it's like gold mining, isn't it? Like digging for that one moment of joy and holding on to that each day, I think is great. Because then when you get to the point you're trying to get to, you'll be, you know, full of these pockets of little bits of gold, and it'll just feel so much more magical.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you. My goodness me, what an episode. I absolutely loved talking to Dylan. His endless positivity and happiness is like being wrapped up in a warm hug. Thanks so much to Dylan for taking the time from his crazy schedule to chat. I feel this conversation is important and is going to be useful to so many. Thank you for listening to Unseen Legacies of Childhood. If you or anyone you know has been through or are going through a similar experience and you would like a confidential chat, please do check the show notes below for links to organisations who can help. As always, if you like this episode, please do like, share and follow. Thank you. Next time on Unseen Legacies of Childhood.
Yeah, I was in a coma for 2 weeks. When I come around, I remember all my family and friends are there because they wanted to see, when they brought me out of this induced coma, if I'd have that brain damage permanently, so because of the head injury. So first thing I said is, Bill, get me a drink. And everyone starts crying. And I'm like, I don't even want a drink. Like, but yeah, they was all relieved. And then, yeah, so I was just in hospital for that 6 months, just under. And then, yeah, I was there for a while. And then, yeah, the police officer comes about 2 months in and says, we're going to charge you. I was like,